Today's shiur, Masechet Sanhedrin, Daf Chof Aleph. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material access by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the Shiur, and even better, order your personal volume of this Masechet. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. On Daf Chof Aleph Amud Aleph, we notice toward the top of the page a new Mishnah. The topic will continue with the issue of kings, and we feature in our topic headings that one will find in the outside margin of the pre-marked Gemaras, the Nosei topic heading, Isur Ribui Noshim, the prohibition of a king having too many wives. Approach 1, Gezeres HaKosuv, V'afilu Tzidkonis, that it's a scriptural restriction. And hence, one is not allowed, a king is not allowed to have more than the accepted number of wives, even if she happens to be righteous. Or, number 2, Rak im Mesirois Eslibo. The second approach states that the whole restriction of too many wives is that they will lead him astray. Hence, the restriction would not apply if you're dealing with a large number of pious women. The Mishnah, Lo Yarbe Loi Noshim, Elo Shmone Esrei. Posuk says, Lo Yarbe Lo Noshim, Velo Yosur Levavo, that he should not have too many wives, so as not to lead his heart astray. The Mishnah, according to the first opinion, is that he's not allowed to have more than 18 wives. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Marbe Hu Lo, he can have as many as he likes, Ubavad Shelo Yu Mesiros Eslivo, provided they don't lead him astray. Rabbi Shimon Omer, Afilu achas umesira es libo, hare ze lo yisoena. Even if there is one and she leads him astray, he should not marry her. Imke lomo nemar lo yarve lo yinoshim. If that be the case, so why does the Torah say he should not have too many? The afilu kavigayel, according to Rabbi Shimon, even if they are pious like the righteous woman Avigayel, even so, there is a cap on the number. That is Rabbi Shimon's opinion. The Gemara raises a question, and we also feature this with a topic heading in the outside margin, Mi Doresh Taima Dekra. Amongst the Tanoim, who is it that attempts to offer reasons behind that which the Torah proscribes or dictates? According to the Mishnah, it would appear that Rabbi Yehuda is the one who ascribes reasons behind the Torah. In other words, the Pasuk says that he should not have too many wives so as not to lead him astray. Rabbi Yehuda then analyzes and says that the whole restriction of too many wives is because they will lead him astray, leading Rabbi Yehuda to believe that if they won't lead him astray, then there's no restriction as far as number is concerned. But this practice of offering reasons behind the psukim is actually characteristic not of Rabbi Yehuda, but of Rabbi Shimon. And yet in our Mishnah, Rabbi Shimon doesn't pay attention to the reason behind the pasuk. He says, Rabbi Shimon in the Mishnah says, that he should not have too many wives, period. The number is the cap, regardless of their piety. So the Gemara asks, and we also feature a long question marking, and that you can see by the encircled kuf that appears to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text, followed by a vertical dashed line indicating the length of Gemara text that's dedicated to this question. Lameimra, the Rabbi Yehuda, Dorish Taima Dekra, Rabbi Shimon, Lo Dorish Taima Dekra. Are we to extrapolate from this Mishnah that Rabbi Yehuda is the one that offers reasons for the Torah's rulings, and Rabbi Shimon doesn't offer reasons but takes the Torah rulings at face value. The reason for trying to draw such a conclusion is because from the Mishnah, it's mashmad, it seems to appear that the whole prohibition of too many wives, according to Rabbi Yehuda, is that they will lead him astray. If they wouldn't lead him astray, according to Rabbi Yehuda, then there's no restriction by as far as numbers are concerned. The problem is, though, that we've seen the opposite. V'ho ibcho shaminan lehu. We have seen the opposite as far as these two opinions are concerned, whereby Rabbi Shimon is the one who offers reasons behind the pasuk. Desanya, as follows, and the following source features the issue of taking a mashkon, a collateral, a guarantee for debt repayment. And the Torah talks about the need to take, when taking a mashkon, collateral, given certain circumstances, if one takes, let us say, one's night garments from a person for as collateral, the Torah says that when the nighttime comes, you should return that item to the borrower. And likewise, if it's a daytime garment or some type of daytime utensil, then though you might take that as collateral during the nighttime, but be sure to return it to the lend to the borrower by day. The source begins talking about taking collateral from an almona. Almona, bein shehi aniya, bein shehi ashira, ein memashkin an oisa. When dealing with a widow, whether she be poor or rich, one is not allowed to take from her collateral. Shenamar lo yisach boil beged almona, divrei Rabbi Yehuda. The pasuk says, don't take from the almona her garment as collateral. Does Rabbi Yehuda offer reasons behind this? No, he says it's an across-the-boards restriction. Rabbi Shimon Omer, Ashira memashkinin osa, Aniyo ein memashkinin osa. A woman who may be a widow, but she's wealthy, from her you can take a mashkon. However, from a poor widow, she is the one that the Torah is referring to not to take from her a mashkon. There's a section that appears in a brackets. That is because that the text in the brackets is problematic, and the Gemara repairs it, straightens it out, and that which appears afterwards is the more accurate text. And the source having said that from an aniya one does not take a mashkon, and if we skip the brackets, it comes out like this: mitoch shato memashkona. Since you, if you were to take a mashkon from the poor woman, atochayev lahachsir lo, you'll have to return it to her during the hours that she would need that item. Ve'ato masiyah shemra b'shchenosan. It creates a bad reputation amongst the neighbors of this fellow walking into her house and being engaged in a situation of privacy with her, which is doesn't have the best public image. Let's read the source again, though, with the bracketed section. Reb Shimon says that aniyo ein memashkin oso. Now we look at the brackets. V'ato chayov lahachzir lo, and you're obligated to return to her v'ato the item. V'ato masiyo shem ra b'shchein oseho, and you cause a bad name for a bad reputation for this woman amongst her neighbors. The Amrinon Maikomar, and we ask, what does this mean? What is the meaning of that you are chayav to return and you cause a bad name? Hachi Komar, the proper understanding is as follows: Mitoch shato memashkina, since you are taking from her collateral, ato chayav lahachsir lo, you'll have to return to her those items that you took during the hours that she needs them. And as a result, if you're having to have constant contact with her, that will cause a development of a bad reputation in the neighborhood, of this man going into this woman's house on an ongoing basis. Alma, we see from this source, Rabbi Yehuda lo dorish time adikra, Rabbi Shimon dorish time adikra. Rabbi Yehuda says that the iser of taking collateral from the Alman is across the board. It's having nothing to do with the need to return to her the item when she needs it or not. Namely, if she's a wealthy woman, she has other items. She doesn't need specifically this item that you took from her. And yet, according to Rabbi Yehuda, one just doesn't take collateral from an Almana. And Rabbi Shimon, he's the one that limits the Isser of the Torah of taking collateral from the Almona only if she's poor, because it's only under those circumstances that you're going to have to return to her that item during the hours that she needs it. The Gemara answers, Be'alma Rabbi Yehuda lo dorash taima dekra. In fact, Rabbi Yehuda doesn't offer reasons behind the mitzvahs of the Torah and takes what the Torah says at face value. V'shayni hocha, in the case of the kings and the increased number of wives, this is different. Why? D'meforesh taima d'kra. The posuk itself explains its reason. Matam lo yarbe lo noshim. Why should he have not too many wives? Mishum d'lo yosur levavo. That's actually in the Torah itself. And therefore, We could infer that if they would not be moser es libo, meaning they would be pious women, then it would be mutter laharbos. It would be mutter for him to have an unlimited number of those kinds of wives. Rabbi Shimon Omar Loch. Rabbi Shimon, who we know in general offers reasons, he says, Michti, Be'almo Darshinon Taima Dekra. In general, notice, before we go further in the Gemara, we're going to be preoccupied with Rabbi Shimon's approach for about four lines of Gemara. That's indicated by a long marking that we have inserted in the space to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text, Rabbi Shimon abbreviated, with the dashed vertical line. So Rabbi Shimon says that in general, if the Torah would say something in an unqualified fashion, we on our own would offer the reasons behind the Torah teaching. Im kain lichtav kro lo yarbe lo inoshim v'lishtok. Being that that's the case, the Torah could have remained silent, leaving out the continuation of the pasuk, and simply said the first part, lo yarbe lo inoshim, he should not have too many wives. Ve'anoam, and on my own, I would have said, ma tam lo yarbe, why should he not have too many? Mishum de lo yosur, because they may lead him astray. Lo yosur lomali, why then does the Torah have to say explicitly, lo yosur, that his wife should not lead him astray? The answer to that is, afilu achas umesiro eslibo hare zu lo yisaena. That if you're dealing with even one, a singular wife, but she is of a negative nature, whereby she could lead him astray, he should avoid marrying her. Elomani mekayim lo yarbe. If that be the case, so then what is the Torah trying to teach when it says he should not have too many? Once again, if you're dealing with a negative type woman, then even one is not allowed. So what is the Torah teaching when it says he should not have too many and multitudes? The answer to that is Da'afilu Kavigayel. The issue of too many includes even if they happen to be righteous, like Avigayel. Even so, there's a cap, there's a number restriction. The Mishnah mentioned the number, and the opening clause of the Mishnah said he should not have too many wives, just he should, it's limited to 18. The Gemara therefore asks, Hani Shmoina Shmoina Esrei Minolon, from where does the Mishnah know 18? Dichtiv. The Pasuk says, Vayivoldu LeDavid Bonim Bechevroin, Vayhi Bechoroi Amnon. Notice we've circled the names in the next couple lines of women who bore children to David, namely, these are his wives, and we're going to number up to six initially. So the first, he mentions here that he had sons, and his firstborn was Amnon, born to his wife Achinoam, Hayizrailis. Umishnehu, the second one, Kilov Avigail Ishes Nobel HaKarmeli. Second wife was Avigail, who had once been married to Nobel HaKarmeli. Third, Vashlishi Avshalom ben Macho, Vihoravi Adonio ben Chagis, Vahamishi Shvatio ben Avital, Vahashishi Yisraam le Egla Ashes David, Ela Yuldu le David Bechevron. There's a list then of six sons that were born to David from these six different wives. Vikomale Novi im Me'at Vosifaloch Kohena Vichohena. The Pasuk makes reference to an addition of Kohena Vikohena, which literally means like this and like this. Kohena equals Shis. Once having enumerated six wives, and the Pasuk says, and I will add to you like that, meaning like the previous number, like six, so the word Kohena accounts for another six, and then the second appearance of the word Vikohena equals Shis, another six. Tahavu Lahu Tamni Sari. So you have your list of six names plus the word Kohena repeated twice. Total of 18, therefore. We notice a new geometric form. This the diamond appears. On the outside margin, there's an explanation under the Mivne. Hatsa'ot Nosofois Laminyan Noshim. Different suggestions with regard to a final number of women for a king. Maskif lo Ravina. He asks, Emo Koheno equals Tarti Sori, Vechoheno equals Esrin Ve'arba. Why not say like this? We had a list of six names, and then another Koheno, which would mean a total of 12, and then following that, you have again the word Vechoheno, which would mean whatever number we had up till that point, if we had a total of 12, then another 12, which would be a total of 24. In fact, Tanya Namioch, we have a brisa that supports this suggestion. Lo yarbe lo inoshim, yoiser mi esrim varba. He should not have more than 24. The Gemara proceeds with another suggestion. Ulaman didorish vov. In other Gemaras, one finds Tanoim that pay attention to the letter Vav that's attached to certain words and say that it represents an additional number. So, in that context, the Gemara asks, Uleman Didorish Vav, according to the Tanoim that darshan the Vav, you would come out with Arboim Ushmoina Hafi, you would have 48 wives. We have the original list of names. And then we said Kohena, which is 6, which is a total of 12. And then we said Kohena, a second time Kohena, which would be 24. And then there's a Vav attached to the word Vechohena, which would be whatever number you had if you had 24. Then that again would get you to 48. Tanya Nami Hachi, Lo Yarbe Lo Noshim. In fact, there's a Tanakh source that supports this. It says you should not have too many wives. Yosem Arboim Ushmoina. Not more than 48. Vitana didan mai taime, according to our Tana who said 18, what's the reason behind that? After we've seen two other approaches that are legitimate approaches, why does our Tana stick with 18? Amrav Kana, makish koheno basu le koheno kama. We compare the latter koheno to the earlier koheno. Ma koheno kama equals shis. Just like the first appearance of the word koheno meant was a reference to six women. Af Koheno Basra equals Shis. Therefore, the second appearance of that word is going to similarly make a reference to six. The Gemara asks, and we have a new geometric form. This too is explained in the outside margin. Kushos al Basis Hamispar Shel Hanashim. We're going to be questioning the number of women that a king is allowed to have as wives. The Gemara asks, V'ho havoi Michal. King David had another wife, Michal, and she could have been accounted for, and that would change the entire
numbering. Omar Rav. So Rav answers, no, I don't have to, that's not a question, because Eglah, she was featured in number 6 in our list above. Zu Michal, Eglah is Michal. Velomenik Roshma Eglah, why does she have that name? Shechaviva Lov ke Eglah, that she was beloved to David, like an Egil. Vechein Hu Omer. Similarly, you find the word Egel used to refer to a wife in the context of Shimshon HaGibor. It says there, Lule Charashtam Be'eglosi. At this point, we see a bracketed section. The Gemara after the bracket section picks up again with another bowtie form, which would indicate another question regarding the number of wives. Now, within the bracketed section, the Gemara is going to be focusing on Michal and her descendants, if Bichlal she had any. The reason for this bracketed section is because we just made mention of Eglah being Michal, and Michal having born to, a child to David. So the Gemara asks, Umi Havu L'Michal Boni? Did she have any children whatsoever? The Hoksiv, Pasuk says, "Lemicha b'ashol lo haya lo valad ad yoy moisa," that she didn't have any children until the day she died. So how can you say above that Yisra'am was born to Eglah and explain that Eglah was Michal? We have a new geometric form, the house form. This indicates to that you have one over here, and to try to scan ahead and see if you see any others. And we do a couple lines later, and explain the outside margin. Deos b'masai Michal yolda. We're going to have opinions that deal with the issue of when did Michal give birth. So, bearing in mind the pasuk that just said that she didn't have a child ad yom Musa. Omar Rav Chisda, ad yoim moisa lo yola, that up till the day of her death she did not have children. B'yoim moisa hoyola, but on the day that she died she bore a child. The Gemara now asks about this, the Rav Chisda's suggestion that the ad in the Pasuk had said that she did not have children ad yoim moisa. Gemara is now going to ask about that. Michti, bonim hecha ka chashiv lehu. The children that were mentioned, that were listed, where were they listed? Bechevron. They were referring to children that he had in Chevron. Ve'ilu mais de Michal. The incident involving Michal, where the pasuk says that she would have no more children, she would have no children. That's an incident that took place later. That was Birushalayim Havei. It took place in Shalem Dichtiv, Umicha Bashol Nishkofa Biyar HaChalon, Vatires HaMelech David, Mefazez Umechaker Lefnei Hashem Vatives. The Pasuk describes the return of the Oron to Yerushalayim, and David is seen dancing and carrying on in front of the Oron in joy and ecstasy. And this, in the eyes of Michal, was a degradation of the position of a king. And as a result of her negative attitude toward David's expression of joy, she was punished. The Omer of Yudah, Vitemer of Yosef, Shaklusa Michal Lemitrefasa. She took her portion, so to speak. The Rashi explains, the upper part of the Rashi commentary, Yomar Rav, Shokol Michal, Mitrifosa, Ze Hoya Piraon Chatasa, Ma Shenichta Vetzido. This was payment for the sin, that which it says in the Pasuk right next to this incident. It says, Lo Hoya Lo Vlad. Alma, we see from here, Me'ahu Maisa Ve'elach Lo Hoya Lo. From that incident onwards, she did not have children. But before that incident, we can say that she did have children. And that would account for the pasuk above that said that the sixth son was Yisram, that was born to Eglah, and we explained that was Michal, and that took place in Hebron, which was much earlier than this incident. Therefore, we continue in the Gemara. Elo, Emo. It's rather say as follows. Ad oisoi maisa hoyelo, until that maisa, the maisa that featured David in his ecstasy regarding the return of the Aron, mikan ve'elech lo hoyelo. From that incident onwards, she did not have children. Gemara asks, how can you tell me that we have this restriction in the number of wives? We mentioned 18. How can that be? V'haksi v'yikach David od pilag shebenosh Yerushalayim. And David took other concubines and wives in Yerushalayim. So Mor says, no, v'mluye shmona esor. This is to get up to 18, to round out to the number of 18 is what's referred to here. But it's not talking about that he took pilag shebenosh beyond the restricted number. My noshim umay pilakshim. What are these different entities? Noshim versus pilakshim. Om Rav Yehuda Marav. Noshim ihus v'ksuba v'gedushin. A woman who a man marries by guaranteeing her a ksuba, writing up a marriage document which indicates the obligations that he has toward her, and kiddushin is offering her kesef kiddushin, that creates a bond between ish v'isha. However, pilakshim, that's a relationship between a man and a woman below ksuba or below kiddushin, where there's no ksuba document, no marital guarantees as far as financial guarantees are concerned and others, and also no kesef kiddushin. Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav, arba meyas yilodim hayolo leDavid. David had 400 yilodim, 400 children. V'kulon b'nei yifas toyer hoyu, and they were all the sons, they were the offspring of women that were captured in battle. U'megadle glorios hoyu, and they grew their hair in a specific fashion known as the Bloris fashion. The Gemara in other places describes that in greater detail. V'kulon yoishvin b'kronos shel zahav, they all sat in golden chariots, umahachin beroshe geisus hoyu, and they would lead the troops. They would be at the head of the invading troops. If David was leading an invasion, he would have these arba meis yilodim would be at the head of the troops. Vehem hoyu bali agroifin shel beis David. They were the strong men, the fists of David's household. It's explained elsewhere that when it makes reference to 400 children, it doesn't necessarily mean that there were 400 children that he bore, but they were 400 children that he had under his command. And they were described here as being like leading the pack, so to speak, and casting fear upon all those standing against them. The Omar of Yehuda Amarav, Tomar Bas Yifas Toar Hoysa. Tamar, in a story that's featured in Sefer Shmuel, was a child that was born to David through a relationship that David had with a Yifas Torah, a woman captured in battle. Tamar happens to be the sister of Avshalom. In other words, Avshalom and Tamar were fathered and mothered by the same couple, namely David and the Yifas Torah mother. In fact, we saw above Avshalom's mother's name was mentioned in the list as Avshalom ben Macha, number 3 above in the list of 6 wives. So how do I know that Tamar, the daughter of David, was mothered by a Yifas Toar? The answer to that is explained in the Gemara very shortly. By way of introduction, one should be aware that there was a rather sad incident reported in Sefer Shmuel between Tamar and another son of David by the name of Amnon, where Amnon wanted to have relations with her, and though they were children from David. how do I know from the psukim that Tomar was a daughter of Iafastor, namely her mother was a woman captured in battle with all of the halachas that apply thereof. Shinemar, the pasuk says, Viata daber no el hamelech, ki lo yimnoeni mimcha. She, Tomar, is addressing Amnon, her brother. Her brother, namely another child of David, and says, talk to, instead of, in this particular incident involved a case of a rape, so she's pleading on her own behalf, instead of raping me, why not you, Amnon, talk to the king, he will certainly not withhold me from you. This discussion is taking place between whom and whom? Between Tamar, who was fathered by David, and Amnon, who also was fathered by David. If you were to think that Tamar's mother was a mother that David took through marriage, then what you would have here is a brother and sister. An achte mihavish sharyalei is a sister, possibly mutter to her brother. Is she allowed to be taken in marriage by her brother? Certainly not. So how could this suggestion even come up? How could Tamar suggest to Amnon to speak to their father, and he would certainly not withhold a marriage between Amnon and Tamar? Brothers and sisters cannot get married. Eloshmamino bas yifas Torah hoisa. We therefore have to come to the conclusion that Tamar's mother was a bond that developed between David and her mother. That bond does not create children that would then be classified as brother and sister. And the only way to explain that bond would be that, to explain that her mother, in fact, was a woman taken in war and not through standard marriage means. Continuing with the story of Amnon and Tamar, Ula Amnon Rea. Amnon had a friend, Ushmo Yoinodov ben Shimo Achi David, V'Yoinodov Ish Chocham. Omar of Yiromarav, he explains, Ish Chocham L'Risha. He says that he was wise in evil. V'Yomer Maduato Kocho Dal ben Hamelech, V'Yomer Lo Yoinodov Shchav Al Mishkovcho V'Hischol Ad V'Oso V'Einai Es Habirya. If one opens up the Tanakh and sees what was happening over there, we see a situation where Amnon was infatuated by Tamar. He wanted her. He wanted to have her. And he didn't know how to get her. So he received advice from this figure, Yoinodov ben Shimo, which he would appear from the pasuk to be actually a nephew of David. So Yoinodov tells Amnon, what's the problem? Why don't you just feign sickness and ask her to come and prepare a special type of fried food, pancakes, in your presence, and you'll be able to have her that way. This was according to Rav Yehuda Marav. Yoinodov was giving him bad advice, was giving him advice whereby the unfortunate incident of the rape actually ensued. The psukim continue there. Vatika hamashres vatitzok lefonov. This is in the preparation of the pancakes that was the food that Amnon requested. She took the pan and poured it out in front of him. Omar Rav Yehuda Marav she'asalo mine tigun. She prepared fried food so that she would. The pasuk describes her taking the pan and with its oil contents, and after the pancakes were prepared, pouring them out in a plate for Amnon. at that point in the scriptures, and when you open up the Tanakh, you see that he, Amnon, grabbed her, and then what appears to have conducted a rape there. Vayisno eho Amnon sinogdol mod. And then it says that Amnon broke out with great hatred toward her. My time, oh. Why all of a sudden this hate? He was so infatuated with her before. Why now sino? Amar Rav Yitzchok, nimo nikshura aloi v'asa osoi krus shavcha. In the course of the intimacy, a hair seemed to get tied up around him, around Amnon, and causing him a injury in that particular area of his body, and making him into a krus shavcha, which is a form of impotency, whereby he won't be able to bear children anymore. The Gemara asks, all right, but v'chinikshra lo ihi mayavda. So some kind of hair became entangled. What did she do? Why would that be reason for hate? Elo ema, rather say, koshra lo nimo v'asa oso krus shofa, that it was a premeditated act that caused him to become a krus shofa, become impotent. And that's what aroused, since it was premeditated, she planned it, she acted in order to make him that way, that's what caused the hate. The Gemara asks, but all of this requires the presence of hairs in that particular area of the body. But Eini, the Gemara asks, V'ha dorash rava, ma'idichtiv v'yetzi loch shem b'goyim b'yofyech. That's a posuk. The Gemara explains, she'ein lahem livnois Yisrael lo se'ar beis ha'shechiv lo beis ha'erva. That the Benos Yisrael, the Jewish women, don't have hairs under their underarms, nor in that particular area during intimacy. We've dashed underlined Besa Erva because this is relevant to our discussion. Sigmar says, Shiny Tomar. Tomar doesn't fall under the category that was featured in the Pasuk that said, Vayetzi loch shem b'gam b'yofyech, because she was the daughter of a Yafastor, of a woman taken in captivity in the course of the war that we, as we described before. And therefore, she did have the Seyar Besa Erva, and therefore was capable of hurting Amnon during that particular relationship. Vatitach Tomer Efer Arosha. And after the rape, it says that she placed the ash on her head, Uksoinis Apasim Sholeo Kor'a, and she tore her garment, the Uksoinis Apasim, a type of garment. She tore Tono Mishmeru of Yeshua ben Korcha, Geder Godol Godra Tomar. That Tomar created a very great fence. Ba'oisa Shah Amru. At that point, when this event took place, this rape took place, a very unfortunate circumstance between a son of David and a daughter of David engaging in this type of behavior. We could say an event that happened in the best of households. And this was a shocking affair in the public. It's also noteworthy that after this event, Tamar went out and seemed to make it a public issue. She screamed, she cried, and she rent her garments and placed the ash on her hair, on her head. The Rashi says, Godra Tamar, the final Rashi, through her tears and screams, and she deprecated herself, she conducted herself in a disparaging manner, in a belittling manner. Other women then reasoned a kal v'chomer type of logic. Ma benois malachim ira kilkul zeh. Mind you, daughters from the best of households, this unfortunate event took place. With commoners, how more likely such an event could take place. So this served to put the women of the public on notice to be very, very careful. Let us see this in the Gemara. Ba'isa Shah Amru, at that point that Tamar emerged from this rape event, people then said, Livnois Malachim Kach. If to the women of royalty this could happen, to common women all the more so. If to women that are that live a modest lifestyle, like Tamar was a modest type woman who did not wasn't involved with in flirtation and other mixing of the genders, and nevertheless this incident took place. Leprusa sahas kama vakama, women who are fairly loose in their general moral behavior, all the more so such a thing could happen. We continue with our memros of Rav Yudah Amarav that have been featured along the way in these triangle forms. Amarav Yudah Amarav Ba'isa Shah, upon the transpiring of that event, the rape with Amnon and Tamar, Gozru Al Ha'ichud V'Al Ha'Pniyah. There was a rabbinic ruling. The word gozer was emphasized, and it will be appreciated as we go on in the Gemara. There was a rabbinic ruling against being in private, whether it be a married woman and a with another man, or a single woman and another man. The restriction stating that they are not allowed to be in private with one another. The Gemara asks, Yichud, there's a long question that we're going to be starting now. You can see it is indicated by the kuf that's encircled and positioned to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text with a dashed vertical line indicating the length of the question. How can you tell me that yichud, that the issue of being in private is a function of a rabbinic ruling, d'oraisahu, it's a prohibition that stems from the Torah itself, even without rabbinic intervention. Remez liyichud min haTorah mina. Where do you find a reference to the prohibition of yichud in the Torah itself? Shinemar, the pasuk says, ki yisischa achicha ben imecha. The pasuk, on a superficial level, is describing the prohibition of trying to convince one to engage in idolatrous worship. And it says, the translation, when he tries to lead you astray, and who is the he over here? Kiyasiso achicha ben imecha, your brother from a common mother. So the Gemara asks, V'chi ben aim meses ben av eno meses, is it only a brother from a common mother that's capable of leading one astray, and a brother from a common father is not able to do that? Obviously, anyone is able to lead his friend astray if they try. That's called meses. So what's the point of this pasuk that says that when one's brother from a common mother, Ela Lomar Lach, the example that's featured in this pasuk is a hint to the following halacha: Ben Misyached im Imo, a son is allowed to be in private with his mother, even though that would constitute a forbidden relationship. Nevertheless, as far as being in private, a son is allowed to be in private with his mother. V'ein Achir Misyached im Kol Arayish B'Torah. But with regard to all other forbidden marriages, situations of forbidden relationships, there is also a restriction, and that's what this pasuk is alluding to. There's a restriction of being in private. So how can it be said that the rabbis are the ones that imposed a restriction concerning being in private, when it's referenced by in this pasuk that Yichud is usur with all arayas? Elo ema, rather say as follows: Gozru al yichud dipnuya. Not like was presented before, two types of privacy were the result of their gezera, where we said Ashes ish and pnuya. No, it's restated over here. Rather say what they ruled upon was they ruled that being in private with a single woman is forbidden. Hence, what comes out from here is that being in private with an Iser Erva, with that kind of woman that's forbidden to marry, that issue of being in private is a Torah prohibition. However, being in private with a single woman, a woman that in theory one could marry, and yet he's not marrying her right now, he's simply being in private with her, that is forbidden based on rabbinic ruling. Continuing with the household of King David, and Rav Yehuda Amarav comments, V'adonio ben chagis misnasi leimor aniyam loich. And Adonio had his own ideas of taking over the kingdom from David. Omar Rav Yehuda Amarav, Malamit shebikesh lohomo v'lo homoso. He was hoping, he wanted the crown that David wore, was hoping that it would fit him. There was a type of miracle that's associated with the king's crown in the time of David HaMelech. The crown of the king would fit only he who is fit to be a king. The Rashi describes that the crown had a type of bar running through the diameter of the crown, and as such, under normal circumstances, it wouldn't sit on someone's head. The bar would interfere with it sitting on the head. However, if this crown with the bar in it was placed on someone who was fit to be the king, as far as Rashi describes, a certain type of crevice would form in the head of that individual, and the bar would fit into that charitz, into that crevice, and that would be a miraculous sign that this man is fit to be king. Hence, Adonio thought that he could have the crown fit him, which would show that he is fit for the malchus, for the kingdom, for serving as king. And it did not fit him. Vayas lo rechev v'parashim v'chamishim ish rotzim lefonov. The Pasuk says that the king made for himself chariots and horsemen and 50 men running in front of him, 50 runners. That's not a 50 men isn't a big deal. So why is the Pasuk feature that? Amr Vida Marav, they were special men. Kulan Netule Tchol V'Chakuki Kapos Raglayim Hoyu. They all had the Tchol organ removed from their bodies. The Rashi says that the perception was that the Tchol organ, sometimes translated as a spleen, causes heaviness on the part of people, and by its removal, they would be much more light-footed. In addition to that, the flesh at the bottom of their feet was carved out so that they would not feel any pain when running over thorns and thistles. So 50 men like that was certainly quite a large group of special people to have serving you. Lo yarbe lo susim. We've double underlined the two elements of prohibition in this particular Mishnah, namely susim and kesev azov. So, continuing with king rules, he's not allowed to have an inordinate number of horses, and the kesev azov lo yarbe lo ma'od, and likewise gold and silver, he should not have too much of. Elo ki dei litein aspanya. The king is allowed to amass gold and silver in order to cover his payroll. The expression aspanya, Rashi says, schar chelosav midei shana v'shana nechosav v'yotzen imo kol hashana. The schar, the wages for his soldiers that served him in the course of the year. So enough money to pay his royal forces that he's allowed to amass. V'koysif l'sifre Torah l'shmoi. And a king also writes a Sefer Torah for himself. Yotze l'mechama, motzio imo nichnasu, machnisa imo. If he goes, engages in battle, he takes the Sefer Torah with him. He comes back, it comes back with him. Yoshiv v'din, he imo, when he sits in judgment, the Sefer Torah is with him. Mesav, he kenegdo. And when he reclines to eat, it's with him. Shenemar v'yisimo v'korobo kol yomei chayov. It shall be with him, and he shall read it all through his life. We have a Tanaic source And in this source, we feature a diamond, and the note on the outside margin draws our attention to what the role of these diamonds are. Lo yarbe lo isusim, lo yarbe lo inoshim. So the opening brisa deals with lo yarbe, he should not have too many horses. The next time we see the diamond, you'll notice it's in the context of kesev vizov lo yarbe lo, he shouldn't have too much of that. We start the source. Tona Rabbana, lo yarbe lo susim, yochal afilu g'day merkavto uparashav. He shouldn't have too many horses. Does that mean even he shouldn't have enough for his royal armed forces, for his merkava and parashav, the chariots and horse riders? Talmud lomar loy. The pasuk uses the word loy in it. Loy eino marbe. For himself, he's not going to have too many. For his own personal pleasure, he should not have too many. Avo marbe hu kadei richbo yuparashav. But as far as having for his armed forces, he certainly is allowed to have as many as he needs. Ho ma ani mekayim susim. What then does the pasuk mean when it says lo yarbe lo susim? So it says, susim habatlonim. These are, call them, show horses. Horses that aren't doing something constructive. Minayin shafilu sus echad vubote al shuhu belo yarbe. From where do I know that even if he has one horse and it's not involved with anything constructive, that it's that itself is a violation? Talmud lomar, leman harbois sus. You see in this pasuk the word sus appears in the singular. If you're telling me that even a singular horse and it's not engaged in any constructive activity and the king possesses it, that's considered lo yarbe. It's already a violation of the law. Susim lomali. What is it necessary for the Torah to talk about the word horse in the plural? Like the opening of this source had lo yarbe lo susim. Why is it in a loshen rabim? Answer, lavor, belois asa, I'll call sus visuf, sus. The Loshon Rabim indicates, the plural language indicates that for every horse that he has, that's botel, that's a show horse, something that's not involved with some constructive activity, for each one, he violates the negative commandment. The Gemara continues, taimo de kosa rachmon aloi, ability to come to this conclusion is only because the Torah used the word loy unto himself. Ha lav hochi, had the Torah not used the word loy, have amino afilu kadei richbo yuparashav nami lo, I would have thought, or would I have thought, that having an increased number of horses for his royal armed forces would also be restricted. I wouldn't have thought that. So the question is, what is the role of the word lo when it says he should not increase for himself? Which, if you want to draw an inference from that, for his armed forces, he could have. But the question being, do I really need the word lo to teach me that? So the Gemara goes on. Lo yitzricha la'afushi. I need the word lo to tell me the following. That if he wants to have for his armed forces an extra large amount, that too he would be allowed to have. V'kesev izov lo yarbe lo kedei litein aspanya. Tan Rabbanan. Now focusing on the issue of too much gold and silver. Kesev zov lo yarbe loy. He shouldn't have too much of that. Yochol afilu kedei litein aspamya. Does that mean that he shouldn't have a lot, even if it's money that would be dedicated for paying his royal forces? Tamal omar loy, loy eino marbe, avo marbe hu kedei litein aspamya. He's not allowed to amass funds. That is only if it's for himself. That's for loy, for himself. However, if he wants to amass extra funds for the purpose of paying the royal armed forces, he's allowed. So now, once again, like we saw a few lines up, why is it, or how do I know that for his armed forces he's allowed to add? Taimu the Kosar Rachmanu Lo Ha Lav Hochi Havi Amino Afilu Kedei Litei Lasman Min Ami Lo. And if the Torah had not written the word Lo, would you have thought that even to pay for his royal forces he would not be allowed to have Kesef Ezov? Lo Tzricha Laharvacha. Namely, even without the word lo, I would have known that it's mutter for him to amass gold and silver for his armed forces. Therefore, the word lo comes to teach me, the word lo, lamed vav, comes to teach me that that if it's a matter of amassing forces for his royal forces, he's allowed to amass with a comfort zone, a lot, more than he absolutely needs. Hash namis loy ledrasha. Now that we're telling you that the word lo is available to be darshaned, lo yarbe loy nashemai darshes bay. What's the significance of the word loy in this particular pasuk when it says he should not increase for himself too many wives? So the more answers, limute hetiotos. The word lo refers to the king. The king is not allowed to have too many wives. However, a commoner, he is mutter in ribui noshim, in having a lot of wives. As we go on, we notice a new geometric form, a bow tie form. This is explained in the comment in the outside margin. If you notice where there is a bow tie, it says there, yishuv stirus b'psukim, a resolution. These will be attempts to resolve contradictory verses, be'inyan oshro shel shlomo, in the context of the wealth of King Solomon. Rabbi Yehuda raises a seeming contradiction in Psukim. Ksiv vayhi l'shlomo arboim elef urvois susim l'merkavto. Shlomo Melech had 40,000 horse stalls for his riding forces. Uksi vayhi l'shlomo arboas alofim urvois susim. Another pasuk said he had 4,000, not 40,000. How do we resolve this? Gemara answers, im arboim elef it's the boas hayu. If the 40,000 is a reference to it's the boas, it's a large structure for horses to live in. Kol echad ve'echad hayu bo arbos alofim urvois susim. Then we would say that each one of them had 4,000 stalls for horses. These are divisions between each row that's in the stable, possibly. The im arboas alafim itzablos hayu, and if what he had were 4,000 itzablos were the stable, the large structure that housed the horses. So if he had 4,000 of those, kol echad ve'echad hoyu bo arboim elef urvosus, and then we would say that each one of them had 40,000 stalls for the horses. Rabbi Yitzchak Rami, ksiv ein kesef nechshav imei shlomo lema'uma. One pasuk says that silver or money was of no importance in the time of Shlomo. There's no importance whatsoever. Hence we've dashed on the line the word lima'uma. Uksiv, another pasuk says, Vayitain Shlomo esakezeb yishalayim kavonim, that Shlomo HaMelech was the King Solomon paid out money, dispersed money like in Yerushalayim as if it were stones. Those stones are of minimal value. They have some value, even if they're pebbles, they have some value. So this is as opposed to the pasuk before that said kesef was not worth anything, was not me'uma, nothing. Here the kesef is paralleled in value to stones. Lo kasha, there's no difficulty. Kan kodim shenasa shlomo es basparo, before he married basparo, then we say that kesef was not worth anything. It's explained by the Meforshim that before he got involved with his preoccupation with foreign women, like as is illustrated by his marriage to the daughter of the Egyptian monarch. Before he got involved with that, he was on a high spiritual plane. And being on such a high spiritual plane, preoccupation with money was a non-issue. Money was itself was a non-entity. However, after he married her, he fell in his spiritual level. And as a result, when one falls in spirituality, the money takes on greater and greater significance. Hence, at the beginning of his fall, so to speak, the money, in his eyes, took on a certain value. Omar Yitzchak, Bishal Shenosa Shlomo's Bas Paro, at the moment that he married her, Bas, the daughter of the Egyptian monarch, Yorad Gavriel v'notz konaviyam, the angel Gavriel came down and wedged a stick in the sea, v'helo sirtoin, and caused dirt to gather around this staff, the olov nivne krach godol shebaromi, and upon that eventually developed a large city in Rome, in the Roman Empire. The Omar Rav Yitzchak, notice we are using this house form, and it was featured in our opening, in the comment that accompanies the opening of the sugya, Sidro Shel Divrei Rav Yitzchak. This is a series of Rav Yitzchak comments. So we have another comment of his, V'Omar Rav Yitzchak, Mipnei Ma Lo Nizgalu Tamei Torah. Why is it that the Torah mitzvahs, the Torah laws, are not accompanied by reasons? Why does the Torah not reveal its reasons when teaching different mitzvahs? The answer is, Sharei Shtei Mikros Nizgalu Tamon, of two examples of psukim where the reason behind them was revealed. Nichshal Bohen Godol Ha'olam, and in those very cases, because the reason was provided, the greatest of men stumbled. Ksiv, and the Gemara now illustrates, Lo Yarbe Lo Yinoshim. The Pasuk says that he, the king, should not have too many wives, Velo Yesur Levavo, and they should not lead his heart astray. Well, upon learning that, Omar Shlomo, Shlomo said, Ani Arbe Velo Asur, so I'm going to take upon myself many wives, and I will not be led astray. I'll overcome it. Uksiv vayhi le'ei ziknas Shlomo noshov hitu es levavo. And it says that as Shlomo aged, his wives led him astray. So he thought he would be able, he would be beyond what the Torah said. Not so. Uksiv lo yarba lo susim, and it goes on to say v'lo yoshiv eso om mitzrayma. He should not have a multitude of horses, so as not to lead the people back to Mitzrayim. The Torah, in several places, mentions its the restriction of going back and dwelling in Mitzrayim. Horses, Rashi points out, were raised in Mitzrayim. So people who wanted to amass horses have to have contact with Mitzrayim. Well, V'Amar Shlomo, Shlomo said, Ani arbe v'lo ashuv. I will increase my horse holding, and I won't go back to Mitzrayim. I won't cause people to go back there. Uksiv vayit vateitse merkavo mi Mitzrayim sheish v'chulei. And lo and behold, we find that Shlomo, in his pursuit of horses, had people go back there to Mitzrayim, and once again falling into this trap, so to speak. Therefore, better not give the reasons and just teach that which the Torah wants to teach in an unqualified fashion, and that will prevent people from trying to explain their way out of conforming to those restrictions. The Kosef Sefer Torah Lishmo
Tana, Ubavad Shlo Yisnoe Bishel Avoisov. A king is supposed to write a Sefer Torah for himself, and this Tanaic source says he should not benefit from the Torah that was written for preceding kings. In other words, if his father was a king, he shouldn't say that I don't have to write a Sefer Torah, I got my father's Torah. So we're being told over here, Shelo Yisnoi B'Shalav Oisav. Omar Rabba, Afal Pi Shenichul Avoisav La'odav Sefer Torah. Rabba talks about all people right now. He says that even though a person inherited a Sefer Torah from his father, Mitzvah Lichtav Mishelo Shenemar V'Ata Kizu Lechem Esashira. It's still a special mitzvah for a person to write his own Sefer Torah, not rely on that which he got from his father. Esve Abaye. Abaye raises an objection to Rabba's teaching. The source says, V'koisev lo Sefer Torah lishmo, shalo yisnoe b'shal achirim. A king writes his own Sefer Torah so as not to benefit or fulfill his obligation through a Sefer Torah that was owned by others. Melech in, Hedyot lo, the restriction of not benefiting from someone else's Sefer Torah, that's a king restriction. But as far as commoners are concerned, there's no restriction. Notice what we've done with our markings. We've dashed underlined the expression Hedyot lo, and this is to be contrasted with what Rabba said. And where we also, the line two lines up, we dash on the line, La'odom mitzvah, that according to Rabba, a commoner has an obligation to write his own. And here we see commoner, no. Lo tzricha l'shtei toros. We're going to preserve Rabba's teaching. If that be the case, so why does the source feature a king? The king is different, because a king has an obligation to prepare two Sifrei Torah for himself. As opposed to a commoner, he is obligated to prepare one Sefer Torah for himself. Uchedisanya, and is as illustrated in the following source, which deals with the number of Sefer Torah for a king to have. The Kosav lo is Mishneh v'chulei. Kosev lishmo shtei toros. We derive from this pasuk that the word Mishneh means two, that the king must write for himself two Sifrei Torah. Achas shi yitzes v'nichneses imo. One that is with him at all times. It goes when he goes out is with him, and when he comes back it's with him. V'achas shenachas lo b'veis kenosov, and a second Sifrei Torah which is going to be stored in the royal treasury. Oisah shi yitzes v'nichneses imo, that which accompanies him when he leaves and comes back. Eino nichnas bo lo l'beis hamerchatz v'lo l'beis hakisei. Even though it's with him at all times, that does not include the times that he's in a bathhouse or in the bathroom. Shenemar v'hoya so imoi v'korobo. The pasuk says the Sefer Torah that we have been talking about is with him, and he shall read from it. Mokom haroi l'krosbo. It's with him when he's in a place that is fit to read. A bathroom or a bathhouse are not places that is fit to read from a Sefer Torah. Hence, it's not expected to accompany him, the king, into the bathhouse. Before we go on in the Gemara, let's take advantage of our topic heading, no say, that you find in the outside margin. Sug haksav vezalosh nitna Torah l'Yisrael. We're going to deal with the type of script and the language in which the Torah was given to Am Yisrael. V'deyoy shenus im ovar shinuyim b'meshach hadoros. And we'll see different opinions as we go on in this sugya, which continues to the upper part of Chof Beis Amud Aleph, whether the type of script and language that the Torah was given in, did it go through changes in the course of the generations? Omar Marzutra Vitema Mar Ukva Bitchila Nitna Torah Yisrael Biksav Ivri Veloshana Kodesh. In the time of Moshe Rabbeinu, the Torah was given to Klal Yisrael in something referred to as Ksav Ivri. That's a type of script, and the language was Hebrew. Chozra V'Nitna Lahem B'Mei Ezra B'Ksav Ashuris V'Loshan Arami. And in the time of Ezra, things changed. The script changed, and it became script that's known as Ashuris, Ksav Ashuris, which is different than Ksav Ivri. Ksav Ashuris is associated with the type of letters that we have today, and Loshon Arami. That's a second stage. A third stage, Biru Lohem Yisrael, the Jews chose the following, Ksav Ashuris V'Loshon HaKodesh, that they chose that the Torah should be written in the Ashuris script and in Hebrew, in the Hebrew language. V'nichu l'hedyotos, and they left for the Hedyotos, we'll describe who that is later, Ksav Ivris V'Loshon Arami, the Ivris script, and the language in Aramaic. My man hedyotas, who are the hedyotas that are referred to over here? We saw in this series of development, we saw that the Jewish people chose for themselves Ksav Ashuris V'Loshon HaKodesh. Who were the others for whom the other types were left? Omrav Chizdo Kusoi, the Kusi people, they were left with the Ksav Ivris and Loshon Arami. My Ksav Ivris, what type of script is that? Omer of Chizdo, Ksav Livoino. Rashi says, Livono, Oisios Gedolos, Kein Oisin Shekoisin, Bekmeos, Umezuzos. It's a type of large script that is a characteristic of amulets and other types of writings. The Tosfos has an alternative pshat to what Ksav Livono is. As we go on in the Gemara, we notice a triangle form, and this is explained. These triangles are with colored in tops, of course, to make a distinction between them and triangles that were seen earlier on the page. The note in the outside margin says, Deois Tanoim Binyan Ksav Aloshin. We're going to see different Tanaic opinions regarding the type of script and the language of the Torah. Tanya, Rabbi Yossi Omer, Roy Hoya Ezra, Shetinasi Torah al Yodel Yisrael, Ilmolei Kidvoi Moshe. The great Ezra HaSofer was such a great man that he was fit to have the Torah given to Klal Yisrael through him, if not for the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu just happened to come before. So this Brisa will now reveal to us how we see from Psukim the parallel between Ezra and Moshe. B'Moshe hu Omer, u'Moshe Allah el Holokim. B'Ezra Omer, hu Ezra Allah mi'bovel. We see in both of them the word Allah, and we've dashed underline that. Ma Aliyah ha'murkan equals Torah. Just like the word Aliyah in the context of Moshe meant he rose up to get the Torah. Af Aliyah ha'murkan la'alon Torah. So too the word Aliyah that appears in the context of Ezra is a reference to Torah. B'Moshe hu Omer v'oisi sivu Hashem v'oisahi l'lameit eschem chukim u'mishpotim. It describes Moshe as Moshe describes himself as one who was commanded by God to teach the Torah and its different laws. Be'ezra hu Omer ki hechin Ezra levavo lidrosh es Torah Hashem v'lasos l'lameit b'Yisrael chukim u'mishpot. Very similar concept you see by Ezra, also an individual who was dedicated to teaching Torah and Torah precepts to the Jewish people. Even though Ezra was not the one through whom the Torah was actually given, nevertheless, it was through him, or in his time, that the script changed. Shinemar Uksav Hanishtavon Kosuv Aramis Umeturgom Aramis. Rashi at the top says, Uksav Hanishtavon Ksav Shenishtane, a script that went through a change. High crawl about Ezra Ksiv. This posuk is a posuk at the time of Ezra. Shoyu Kosvi Vyomov
ksav mishnah shenishtane malach shekosav mona mona takalu parsin. There was a script that started to be used as a result of the incident involving the angel with the famous story of the handwriting on the wall, whereby a certain coded expression was written, and the Rashi goes on to say, "Bimei Daniel ksav de arami veloshon arami." In the time of Daniel, what was common was a Aramaic script and the Aramaic language. The Omer lo kaholin ksovel mikra, and the next pasuk that will be featured in the source, second line from the top of the Gemara, says that, and that pasuk indicates lo hayuchum likrois ksav shikosav amal b'mei balshetzar. The script that the angel wrote when the handwriting on the wall appeared, no one was able to decipher it. V'hayushom Yehudim harpe, there were many Jews over there. Shma mino nishtana lehem oisik sav osayom. We see that what must have happened was that there was a new script that appeared just that day. And hence, as the source goes on to say, second line from the top, uksiv lo keholing ksava lemikre, ukishre lehoda lemalka. No one could decipher what was written in order to inform the king. Uksiv v'kosav es mishneh haTorah hazos. The pasuk in the Torah says, and you shall write mishneh haTorah hazos, which means ksav heroi lishtanos. That from the very inception of the Torah, it was already built in, so to speak, that the script could undergo change. And the change we are referring to here, Rashi says, from the Ivris script to the Ashuris script. That Ashuris script being the new script which became established in the time of Ezra. Because as Rashi says on the fourth line from the top, Ubo Ezra v'kosav boi es haTorah b'ksav Ashuris. Ezra came along and wrote the Torah with this new script. Loma Nikra Ashuris, why is it called Ashuris? Sha'olo Imohem Me Ashur. That it came from Assyria, it came from the exile from Bovel to Israel. The diamond is used over here and is explained in the outside margin, the Mivne. Loma Nikra Ashuris. We'll see different pshotim, different explanations for calling this particular script the Ashuris script. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.